Hi, welcome to the Barry Nation podcast, where we support the bariatric community with humor, humility, and honesty. I'm April.
And I'm Jason.
Today, we have the honor of welcoming Dr. Eric Smith to the podcast. Hello, Dr. Smith.
Hey, how are you guys?
We are so excited to have the opportunity to interview you today. We have been doing a lot of talking behind the scenes. We are very much in line with so many of the things that we know and believe about bariatric surgery. You are quickly becoming one of our favorite experts to go to for anything surgical related, because you are there for patients from beginning to end. And very much a supporter of community, right? As a part of this like lifelong treatment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So in one of our most recent conversations when we weren't recording, we were really talking about the power of patient stories and how it can be really hard to share, even with friends and family sometimes, right? And we really started talking about like, why is it so difficult for people to share their stories, or why is it so difficult to really kind of like identify their whys? So our goal for our conversation today with you is really to kind of deep dive into that, right? What have you seen in your own practice with your own patients about their, you know, ability or willingness to share their story? How did they kind of get there? And then what tools do you pass along to them that really empowers your patients and all of us to not only like know and identify our why, but to go even a step further and just start sharing that with a bit of a greater community? We know it's something you're really passionate about, and we know that you're going to have some insights for us that are going to help anybody listening or watching to this podcast.
Yeah. I've got a lot to say about that. And I think it's really important. I'm glad that's what this is about, because we'll dive into that here shortly, but and I have seen a transition in the time that I've practiced. I've been in practice since 2006. Obviously, as social media has grown, that's had an influence in it. But I'll even be honest with you about my opinions about maybe some of the answers that I give patients now versus what maybe I did 10 years ago, when people were apprehensive to share in their story too.
Ooh, this is, I am intrigued. I did not know you were going to drop that little nugget. Well, this is going to be an amazing conversation. I say we just dive in.
Sounds good.
All right, let's do it.
All right.
So, first things first, we always love to give the floor to our guests for you to just introduce yourself. So what would you like to share with the world about yourself, Dr. Smith?
Well, I am in Georgetown, Kentucky, which essentially most people know Lexington, Kentucky. Georgetown's like a suburb of Lexington, at a hospital called Georgetown Community Hospital. I'm very fortunate. I'm at a hospital that has seen the importance of bariatric surgery well before I arrived. I arrived in 2013. So they already knew the importance. I'm going to reveal my simple-minded male attention towards sports, because I compare everything to sports. That's how my mind works. So I always say every hospital has a football program, you know, and that's the program that helps fund and pay for the other programs. So that's kind of our football program, you know, so to speak. Bariatrics has always been important. I walked into a place that knew the importance, but we've definitely grown the program significantly since I arrived. So we're a 75-bed hospital, but I'll do over 400 bariatric surgeries this year myself at a little hospital that size. So it's pretty cool to see what we do compared to a lot of hospitals that are four or five, you know, times its size. But that's because of the support and the importance, as I'm sure we'll talk about tonight and in the future too. I am a robotic surgeon. I do all my surgeries robotically. As far as procedures, I offer a variety of procedures, do a lot of revisions, sleeves, bypasses, CDSs or modifications of duodenal switches. I have a nurse practitioner, a PA, we've got three dietitians. So we've got a pretty big program as far as the complexity of the support that we provide. I've been at my hospital since 2013. And love it. You know, our radius has grown. We have patients that come from 6, 7, 8 hours away sometimes, but obviously we take care of a lot of our own right here in central Kentucky and the surrounding areas too.
It sounds like your practice, just from the conversations that we've had with you, is very much patient focused from start to end. And you really realize the importance of connecting patients, right, with other patients, but just seeing them through for life, right? You are their surgeon for life. This is not something that's just one and done, moved on. You really understand that this is a life-changing event, and your patients are going to need your help for the remainder of their life.
Yeah. Yeah. My statement that my patients probably get tired of hearing me say, but I pound it home, is lifelong follow-up leads to lifelong results. Short-term follow-up leads to short-term results. I had a patient one day tell me that I needed to make a t-shirt with that on it.
Yeah, that definitely needs to be on a t-shirt, because the aftercare that April and I got was lifelong meant until the check was cashed and then we were sent packing on our way. And still to this day, I haven't seen, the only reason I've seen my surgeon, and I'm 2 years post-op, was because I was somebody else's support person, one of my good friends. I was her support person going in, and she wanted to use my same surgeon, and that's why he saw me.
Right. And I will say, I'll be very honest, I have, like I said, a nurse practitioner and a PA. I would say probably in the next 12 to 18 months, we'll probably need another provider as well. They help me a lot with those follow-up appointments. But I make it very clear to the patients from day one that we're going to take care of you in a team approach. You know, the problem is, as a surgeon, patients look at us and say, okay, I'm going to have surgery. I'm going to follow up. You're going to check my incisions. You're going to make sure I'm out of the window of acute complications. And then I'll call you if I need you. And what I tell them is, the further you get out from surgery, the less you need me and the more you need these other team members. And I say, you know, the example I give them is, you all do not want my dietitian, because one, I'm scared to death of blood, to come do your surgery. You don't want my PA or nurse practitioner to do your surgery. You don't want me to be them either. And I think I learned that lesson some time ago, that the best thing that I could do is surround myself with really smart people who think the same way I do, who see patients the same way I do. And we all have our lanes and they crisscross sometimes, but you know, it's hard as a physician. We sometimes we let our ego get in the way. So well, I'm the doctor, so I need to do everything. I can't do everything. I need to find ways to be able to do what I feel like I'm really good at. But I'm not better at giving them dietary advice than my dietitian. I'm not better at some of the things and the education that my providers give those patients. And so, you know, I always say, when I see in the office, the further you get out, I just want a big hug and see pictures and like, tell me how things are going. But the follow-up is a team approach, and it's the only way that I think that you can do it and have success. And it makes me cringe when I hear people say, well, they say I'm done after this long. Or, you know, they say that, well, here's your manual, you know, follow the manual. And if you go to see your family doctor and you have high blood pressure, they treat your disease by medicine and they make you follow up. They got to check your blood pressure. They got to make sure that the medicine's working. They got to make sure you don't need more medicine or less medicine or a new medicine on top of it. That's the only way the disease is controlled. Why in the world would we treat the disease of morbid obesity any different? And unfortunately we do. And I think we've got to stop that. Just because surgery is a component, it's the treatment modality, but it's not the end all be all maintenance to maintain those results. And I think that helps kind of humanize it for patients to look at. We talked about this the other day off camera, and I tell them, you have morbid obesity for the rest of your life. And that's not to depress you, but that's to make sure that you keep your antlers up and your antennas up, whatever you want to call it, and say, I have to stay on top of this to keep this disease at bay. So even though the scale doesn't tell me I have it anymore, you have that disease, you have the propensity to reoccur. So you have to have the tools and follow-up to keep it at bay.
Well, recovery from surgery is really legitimately that. We're not only recovering from surgery, but we're recovering from, you know, being a former food addict, or, you know, having whatever, you know, unhealthy relationship with the food that it, you know, that it is. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's like I tell people, it's almost like an alcoholic that had maintenance alcohol. Like you have a little bit every day to make sure you, you know, stay level. That's basically what we have to do. We're the only people that have to go directly face head on what we were addicted to and only use a small amount to be able to maintain, because we have to. But, you know, you mentioning that and keeping the antennas up is super important, because we are in recovery and we can relapse at any time if we're not careful and don't pay attention. That's how regain happens. That's how, you know, right. slips become slides, become waterfalls, become, you know, the next thing you know, you haven't been in bariatric compliance for quite some time. And now you're looking at 40 pounds of regain and you don't know where to start. And the hill seems insurmountable. And so the shame cycle kicks in. Like, there's all these things that can happen if you're not keeping in tune, not only with your body, but with your mind, to check yourself every time these things occur.
Yeah. And if you don't, the thing is, you know, for that first, if you look at statistics on bariatric surgeries, and people ask that question, you know, well, how much can I expect to lose? You know, and so we talk about excess weight loss, because that's what you have to talk about. You can't talk about pounds, comparing people, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I always give them 2-year data. And then occasionally people will ask, or I'll go ahead and say, but they'll want to know, well, what about, why do you stop at 2 years? Well, your tool doesn't go away at 2 years, but if you follow the data after 2 years, it starts to scatter. Mm-hmm. The reason it starts to scatter is because of compliance, because of follow-up. So if you tell somebody, well, I'm only going to follow up for a year, and you stop it, and we're already admitting that after 2 years, people tend to taper off on follow-up, and that's the reason we see the data start to scatter. Well, all we're going to do is move up the time period when the data starts to scatter, when results start to peter out, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's directly correlated. We know in our profession, it's directly correlated. And so obviously we can't chase people around and make them come back. But when I see programs who give you this impression that, okay, you're this far out, you're good.
Yeah.
You got your book, take off, have fun. It blows my mind that that's happening, you know? And if you as a surgeon can't keep up with those people, you get more people, you know, you grow your team. You get good people and you find a way to provide that for patients. But I think, you know, but you encourage patients to find people like you all too, because ultimately they're responsible for their own outcome. Mm-hmm. And if they were misled, then let's get them to some people. If their surgeon's not going to help them, or the surgical team, let's find somebody else for them.
Yep. Well, and really, right, how I think every bariatric practice is set up, there's no way that you could possibly serve every single patient that you have ever seen throughout your doors for the rest of their lives. It's just not set up that way currently. Not that it shouldn't move in that direction, but it's not. And that was where, you know, Jason, Natalie and I, that is literally the beginning of Bari Nation, is looking around going, this is not adequate. This actually gets harder the further out from surgery that we go. It's very isolating. I'm very confused. I don't feel comfortable going back to my surgeon, or I don't know the answers to this. Information is scattered all over the ether. You don't know what to trust. And we just said, this is ridiculous. If we want to see better results for not only ourselves, if we want lifelong, happy, healthy weight maintenance, it's going to take experts and community and check-in and all of these things that have come together. Right. You know, one of our favorite experts, Laura Grapo, she says that this is her line. She says, community is treatment, right? Obesity is a lifelong disease that will require lifelong treatment, and community is a part of that treatment plan.
Right.
And it is so true. And when you surround yourself by not only other people who are going through what you're going through, right, can empathize, but then you have also a team of experts that are helping you through, you know, explaining and teaching, you know, why you're going through what you're going through. That is a very powerful 1-2 punch that we can use in our bariatric toolboxes to find success.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, and the crazy thing about it too is that, you know, the social media community portion of the, you know, weight loss surgery community has only been around for a very short period of time. So what you see, what we're coming across, is a lot of people that are 4+ years post-op that have just been out there wandering the
right. desert
for 40 days and 40 nights trying to find anything to hold on to. And there's just no information because their surgery program kicked them a long time ago. And, you know, none of the stuff that, you know, we and some of the others have created were even around.
Yeah, so those weren't options.
Yeah, the hard part is they're seeing, you know, they're coming up on regain or just not really knowing exactly how to dial in to, you know, post-op care for themselves, because, you know, a lot of us, I've lived a terrible food lifestyle for 44 years before I had surgery. So just because that book tells you to get a certain amount of calories and call it good, like, I know how to do that. Like, you and I aren't going to agree on how I get that calorie goal, but I'm going to get there. Like, I'll knock out my breakfast and I'll be golden the rest of the day. However, like, if they really want to know how to, you know, how to drill that down, there just hasn't been an option for them. And so that's why, you know, we've seen people as far as 15, 17, 20 years post-op that are just like, I'm so glad that people are talking about this now, because we've just been out here with nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
And you said it earlier, the community, like, sometimes people don't want to talk about surgery. Sometimes they don't want to talk about their protein. They don't want to talk about their macros, but they can just find some people who've been through the same things that they have. They can laugh at their own selves when they've made the same mistakes, and they realize everybody else has too. And they can find people that are different places on their journey. You know, you may have someone who pictorially fits the mold, but when you hear their stories, it wasn't that easy. And people need that, you know. And I think what I love about as I've become more involved in the community, which I had no clue existed, and I'm almost ashamed to say that for many years I didn't know that. Now, there for a while it wasn't there, but even when it was, is there's no trolls. The support that goes along with somebody who's killing it and is, you know, a fitness guru, and oh, by the way, they also have a swimsuit line. They are in a community with the people who just lost their first 50 pounds, or maybe they've gained some of their weight back and they're struggling, or maybe they got pregnant and they're struggling getting that weight back off, or whatever that may be, because they're all in it together. And I think that's because for years, so many people have kept their story quiet. You could be standing right beside somebody that's had it. I can tell you everything that I can tell you that I know from my education and my experience, but I can't say I've walked in your shoes, you know, and it would be crazy for me to say that. So you need those patients, need those people sometimes more than they need me.
We agree, right? There's a time and a place for everything. And what, you know, what we have discovered is that the power of our story, right, sharing our story, has really helped us discover the things that were kind of keeping us back in the first place, right? Those limiting beliefs. But we also know that when you share your story publicly, you do run into the possibility of getting pushback from strangers, right? Trolls, or even family and friends, right? Even spouses. We talk to people every single day who tell us, I haven't actually told my spouse. I told them I needed a hernia repaired and I had bariatric surgery. And you're just, you know, it's shocking, but the fear of being called out or of not really, you know, knowing yourself well enough to even be able to articulate why you have made this decision, I think is a barrier for a lot of different reasons. It's a barrier pre-op and it's a barrier post-op. And if we can just empower people to not only, you know, acknowledge and understand their why, but to really start, you know, piecemealing together their weight story, they can use it as a tool. And the other thing, when we say this, we're not meaning publicly. Like, we have to own this for ourselves first before we can ever get to the point where we feel comfortable or ready to share it publicly. But what we also know is that the reason that bariatric surgery is now on the radar of a lot of different people is because people have found the bravery to go, I've had bariatric surgery. This is my experience. Here's my story. I understand that people are going to make fun of me, but I don't care.
Right. They talk about it. And, you know, I alluded to this in the intro that I'll admit to maybe my shortcomings and early in my career. But if I had a patient in the past, I can't tell you how many times I've heard that story. When you call my family, we're not going to talk about what I had done, or I'm here for a hernia. I've heard it all. And as a physician, the patient comes first, and we're so focused on privacy and HIPAA. And hey, if you're the patient and you tell me you don't want people to know, it's your call. You know, I have to honor that. You know, that's part of my responsibility. And you can't change that. But in the past, where I was so focused as just a physician generically in, okay, don't worry about it. I will keep your privacy because it's your privacy. Now it leads me to ask questions. So in the past, I just let it go. And now I sit down and say, okay, I'm always going to honor your privacy, but let's talk about that. First, you know, if you can't share your story with the people that you feel like love you the most, where's your support system? Are we, how can we handle this? Second, and I think probably what we'll talk about today is, do you have the ability to convince them otherwise? Because I can show you data that nobody with an elementary education would deny. Now, that's not trying to insult them and their education if they choose to, but if you provide this information to them, maybe they will see it very differently because they're uneducated. And that's not a criticism. There's a lot of things I'm uneducated about because I've not been exposed to it. Mm-hmm. So it creates that conversation now that we sit down and say, okay, well, first of all, we'll never do anything you don't want us to do, but we got to figure out why. Because this could be a problem for you in the future if you, number one, don't have adequate support. And I've heard it even from, I can't get my way in, so my family doctor doesn't support me having bariatric surgery. And I say, look, maybe I don't know your family doctor, but if you're doing this, then you need to find a new family doctor. And I'm not saying they're not a good doctor, but for you, they're not a good doctor. They're not looking at data. They're not telling you the facts. And so if they're not supportive of this, the first time something happens, the first time you go back on a medicine, the first time you backslide, do you know what they're going to say? Told you so. Like, you're setting yourself up for failure. So I think now I've learned to ask more questions, and let's see if we can fix that. Let's see if we can resolve that issue of why you don't want to share your story, at least first in your inner circle, and then hopefully for a lot more people down the road, if that's what they choose to do.
Well, and that's a big transition to make, especially for you in your shoes, because you're kind of designed when you come in to kind of, you know, treat the illness, go for the thing. So your deal is, sir, you know, oh, they want surgery. I can do surgery. We'll do this. We'll get you set up. And then you go on about your business. But getting to the point where knowing, you know, having the amount of time under your belt that you do and have seen the things that you've seen, knowing now how important it is for them to have support is huge for doctors to see, because we don't see a lot of doctors that worry about the after side of things. So it's refreshing to see that that's starting to change the more data that comes in, because right. We've talked to people legitimately that are like, my husband won't let me talk about it. Like, I failed as a human because I had to have, you know, surgery and not be able to do this. And they still have to cook meals for their family that do not align with their bariatric goals.
Right.
They can't change anything about the way the family eats. And they're still trying to do this while cooking things that, you know, would never align to their, you know, to their new lifestyle, how their lifestyle is supposed to be. So those are some of the most severe cases that, you know, April and Natalie and I, you know, are the people that we talk to, because it's so sad, because when you think about some of the people that may not want to post on Instagram or Facebook about it, that may be because there's people that they work with, or, you know, they don't want Bob in accounting to see them in their, you know, Transformation Tuesday post in their, you know, in their underwear. So right. They don't want to put that up there. Like, some of that stuff we understand.
But sure.
It's the legitimate side of things where there's, you know, where they don't have one person to reach out to. Those are the ones that I feel are the most critically needed of the support of the whole community, which is why I'm super excited to see that, you know, doctors are starting to reference that a lot more.
Well, we have to treat it like we treat other diseases. I mean, we've got to stop this. And we have to treat it like we treat other diseases. When someone's loved one develops breast cancer, we hold marathons, we hold drives, we make t-shirts, we put out bracelets. And sure, there's some people that are more private about their healthcare. That's never going to change. That's okay. But it's very well accepted. When you have childhood diabetes, you develop a passion. Let's go. Mental health. If it's impacted your family in a negative way, you want to get involved. You want to share your story so no one else has to suffer from that. If you've lost a loved one to either an illness or anything, it is so normal to do that. But yet for bariatric surgery, patients don't feel comfortable doing that. And we've got to find a way to change that. A disease is a disease is a disease. And so raising awareness is what it's all about when you do that. If somebody has breast cancer, you want people to get their mammograms. You want people to follow up on their family history. It's not about go to this one surgeon. He can fix your breast cancer. It's be aware of the disease and seek out people that can help you for follow-up and all those things. And, you know, it blows my mind that we look at this differently, but that's what we have to do. We have to do a better job for the, is what we're talking about right now, these patients and their family members and the people that are close to them. We got to give them some facts and say, here's the facts. Let's start there. And that's usually where I start.
So will you share kind of what, what facts do you share with your patients?
So there's some, here's the big thing. First of all, people think it doesn't work. I'm going to Kentucky, back to Kentucky. It don't work. It doesn't work. And it's too dangerous. That's really kind of the two categories. If you think about it, it doesn't work and it's too dangerous.
And I would add a third, right? Just do it naturally. Just eat less.
When that kind of falls into the, it doesn't work. So that's one of the first things I teach them that you just brought up is I say, diet and exercise alone. You can go Jenny Craig, you can do Weight Watchers. Now we're talking about morbidly obese patients. We're not talking about somebody's trying to lose 20 pounds. Mm-hmm. Somebody that qualifies for weight loss surgery, BMI 35 or higher, you know, severe obesity, I should say, for 35 to 39, and then morbidly obese beyond that. But anybody qualifies for weight loss surgery per what insurance would acknowledge. So diet and exercise alone, whatever plan you want to do, you can do private chef, you can be a personal trainer. I always jokingly say, we can put you on a TV show. Oh, no, we can't. I got canceled because most of the people that won the show, they gained their weight back, and we can go on and on and on and on and on. What's your odds of losing enough weight to get out of the obese category, because that's when we affect mortality, and we'll talk about that too. That's my job. I want you to lose weight, but I want to get you out of the obese category, because that's when I really drop that mortality curve down to flat. What's your odds of that working? Keeping enough weight off out of the obese category for just greater than a year. And many of them kind of guess and said, well, the answer is 1%. So if you do diet and exercise alone and you qualify for weight loss surgery, you have a 1% chance of being out of the obese category, and the day you fall out of it, keeping it off for a year or greater, 1%. Now, there's two reasons I tell people this at the beginning. Number one, because I want them to understand they're not the exception, they're actually the rule. Because sometimes they show up to me and they're so defeated because they're like, it came to this. You know, this surgery that I've been talking about for years, and all my family members says, oh my gosh, do it the old fashioned way, blah, blah, blah. I'm a failure. I'm here. And I don't want them to start off with their head held high and not looking down that you're in the 99% group, not the 1%. And I always jokingly say, if you tell me I can win $1 billion in the lottery and I go blow all my money and you don't tell me the odds, that's on you. You tell me the odds and I do it, that's on me. But like, I should know my odds. So many of your doctors didn't tell you what exercise means. We defined that for them from day one. They didn't tell you what is eating right. You know, but even if they gave you that plan, did they follow that up? Say, now just be aware, you have a 1% chance of a year or more success. I'm not telling you, you shouldn't do that. 1% of however many billion people in this world has a lot of lives that have changed, but that's the odds. So then I say, now what you're here for today, what you're choosing, which is a surgery in conjunction with those two things, your chances at 5 years is 50%. So 50% of you can be out of the obese category 5 years from now. That doesn't mean that 50% failed. But if a 500-pound patient loses to 300, I can't count them. They didn't fall out of the obese category. Are they healthier? Well, sure, they're healthier. But my goal is to get them out of that category. So, you know, you'll hear people say weight loss surgery is 85% success, blah, blah. I mean, it's so vague. I don't like to go there because my goal is ultimately to get you out of the obese category. That's when I impact the diabetes, the cardiovascular disease, and sleep apnea, and on and on and on. So if you start off there and I say, so if I brought your family and I threw 50% at 5 years, 1% at 1 year, and I blinded them, what would they pick? Well, then you start to carry over. Well, wait, is it too dangerous? You know, so if it's this successful, no one can argue what I've said, but if it's this successful, is it too dangerous? You know, what am I risking? So there was a study done quite a few years ago and I can't quote the docs that were involved. It was a huge, I believe, meta analysis where they looked at four common weight loss four common surgeries done in the United States, and they compared mortality and morbidity. 30-day mortality, death within 30 days, morbidity within 30 days, it would be surgical related. Anything from as minor as skin infection to a blood clot or a leak, but they didn't die. And they looked at rheumatoid gastric bypass, hip replacement, colon resection, and it was, a lobectomy or a partial lung resection. And they just looked at morbidity, mortality. The lowest mortality of all four of those was
bariatric surgery. Shock.
But no one's, when their hip goes bad, they don't think, oh man, I'm not going to make it through the surgery. It's not worth it. Or, I've got a colon cancer, but I can't have my colon removed. It's too dangerous. And I say, well, if you keep your obesity, your life expectancy for somebody with severe obesity or higher, so BMI 35 or higher, is reduced by anywhere from 5 to 20 years. Well, if you keep your colon cancer, I'm going to reduce your life expectancy. Let's call a spade here. So you don't want to die of colon cancer. So you assume the risk of having the surgery. But as surgeons, we have to say risk benefit ratio should guide our decisions. And I want there to be a huge gap between the benefits and the risks. And if it starts to narrow, I need to step back and think, is this worth it? I think the general public through COVID has learned a lot about the thinking of risk benefit. All these decisions we make about how much you stay away from people, do you use a mask, do you get vaccinated, and we won't get into all that. But it's ultimately your decision to decide what's the benefits, what's the risks, what makes the most sense based on those things. And so I think you bring those two together and you give them that information. And then you say, okay, so then people say, well, am I going to die from this surgery? Well, I've already told you, you would have picked those surgeries if you needed it. So your mortality, this was back 2011, our mortality rates have dropped significantly. But even in 2011, overall mortality from a bariatric surgery is like 0.3%. It's very, very low. It's actually lower for women. It's around 0.08-ish, but it's higher for men. It's close to like 0.4 for men. Interestingly, we're stubborn, about 75 to 25 women to men. We all know this. You guys know this. And men tend to have it later. So we think that might have a reason that men wait later in life. Maybe they develop more comorbidities when they have the surgery. We don't really know exactly why, but we know we need to encourage men to have it earlier. And we need to get out of our heads and quit being, the tough guy as to, why we won't have it. But so you bring these numbers down and you give this information, because if they're in your office, they're probably convinced this is right for them. Mm-hmm. But man, they got to go home and they don't have me or my team there constantly whispering in their ear and giving this information. So, we have 2.8 million people every year who die as a result of being overweight. Now let's talk about what we've been through the last 2 years. When we hit a million over how many, I say we've been dealing with a pandemic for way longer than the last 2 years. Obesity is the second leading cause of a preventable death, barely behind tobacco. Now, I think we've accepted tobacco is, we should really try to avoid that. It's not going to be good for us. Completely preventable, second highest preventable death. And so when you combine this with, here's an option that gives you this result, here's an option that has a safety profile. And I don't like to use the word safe because nothing in this world is safe. I can't walk outside and I'm safe from something falling on my head, but you get what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. That you have a very good chance of having a very good outcome. And if we leave you alone, look at what can happen to you. So I think we would all agree most people who are morbidly obese tend to have diabetes, right? So if you take a patient who's morbidly obese and they're diabetic, they have a 300% increased risk of developing cancer compared to someone who isn't obese and diabetic. Think about that. 300, our ASMBS this year is wrapped around preventing cancer Fighting Obesity to Prevent Cancer. I'm screwing up the title of the conference, but that's its theme this year. So think about that for a second. So you have a twofold increased risk of dying from cancer if you're obese, and a fourfold increased risk of dying from cardiovascular disease if you're obese. So what's our options? What if we do nothing? And these are some of the things that I throw out to people to get them to understand, you know, when they hear those outside voices come in, because they may not hear it now, but first time they throw up in a restaurant, they're going to hear it. Mm-hmm. Or the first time they try to advance the chicken and they can't figure out how big of a bite to take, they're going to hear it. Or they can't get their fluids in, they're dehydrated, and then they're struggling. You know, you guys have been through it all. First time they gained their weight back, they put some weight back on.
Oh my God, a stall.
But they're going to hear it. So I think it's really important to get these facts in patients early on to empower them to weather that storm if that storm comes.
Yeah. Well, and the good thing about that is that, like with my surgeon, you're 100%, you nailed it, right? Because I was way later than I should have been when I had mine. I was 44. But you know, I always talk about that on here. I wish I would have done it sooner, but I don't know if I would have been as committed to it if I would have done it early as I was that when I did it, when I actually did do it. So I always kind of worry about the commitment level I would have had. So I just kind of play it and just say I did it when I did it, and that kind of worked out the best. But my surgeon actually told me at the time that I was too high risk to do a bypass, and he was going to start with a sleeve because my age and my weight was so high, because I was 468 pounds and 44 years old. And yeah. So even he had the peace of mind, gave me the peace of mind at first to say, you know, I'm not going to do this more, you know, this more invasive surgery on you right now because it's too high risk. We don't want to develop any issues. So what we're going to do is we will start with the sleeve. If you do not lose enough, we can always do a revision to bypass later. I let him know very politely, no, you won't, because this is the one-time shot. I'm going to do what I do, and I'm going to make it work. But, you know, that's, you know, again, being stubborn. But, you know, it was good to know that, like, what you're saying as far as the mortality rate goes, even the surgeons were cued in enough on this to know, hey, you know, this is a high risk, but you're at a higher risk than I would like, so we're going to adjust our game plan to make sure you come out the other side.
Yeah. And you know, and that you bring up a good point. Can you guys hear me okay still? My AirPods just went out, so I'm on regular audio.
No worries. You're good.
Another good point is in today's age, and obviously in experienced hands, but if you look at the mortality rates of procedures separately, individual procedures, bands have really kind of fallen away, but this is even including a band, which I think will surprise some people. Band, sleeve, bypass, duodenal switch, or a modification of a duodenal switch, which is what's probably becoming more popular now. Across the board, there is no statistically significant difference in mortality amongst them all.
Really?
Yes. Now, if you look at specific percentages, for example, a DS is going to have a slightly higher risk of mortality than the risk of, say, a band. But when it comes to studies, we look at statistically significant difference, meaning there's a difference, but it's not statistically significant, so it's not a real difference when in the power of numbers is taken into account. So what is to me, if I take my doctor hat off and I just think as the patient or a layperson, to me, the first thing that comes to mind is, well, that just says these patients have a risk of surgery. I mean, we're dealing with people who have diabetes, they have heart disease, they're overweight. We know those are risk factors to have surgery. And yes, there's specific complications that go along with each of these. But when you pool these all, if it's at a high volume, you know, a place that is experienced in doing these, it's essentially a wash when you come to that mortality rate between these surgeries. And so we try our best to say, we want to make sure when they come in, are you choosing the right procedure? Because like, at the end of the day, you're here to not just lose weight. You're here to become non-obese. That is our ultimate goal. I make that clear at the beginning. Let's stop saying I'm here to lose weight. let's say I'm here to become non-obese, you know, because I mean, everybody can lose 20 pounds, but we're here to become non-obese. And so if you're here, let's do it the best that we can and the best procedure for you, because you don't go to your doctor and say, I just found out I have a high blood pressure at a health fair. And I saw this really cool commercial about a blood pressure pill, this guy kind of running through a field of flowers, and it sounds really cool. I want that pill. You look at your doctor and say, for me and my history and my medical problems, my weight, how much weight do I need to lose? What is best for me? And so we want to remove that. Well, you're telling me a bypass is best for me, but I heard that's so much more dangerous than, say, a sleeve. No, actually, no. So here's what it is. Well, here's your options, and here's what you can expect from those. We have to get past that stigma with the patient, because that's the one we get to talk to. I tell people all the time, I'd love for you to bring your families in, and I'd have a heyday with them.
Right. I could. But, well, I mean.
But I'm, you know, I feel like I'm an advocate for them. Like I have people I've never met. I didn't do your all surgery, but I feel like I'm here to fight for you, for the stuff that you have to hear and deal with that is just untrue. That's why I kind of get a little fired up when we talk about it, because, you know, it's not okay. And I feel like for those of us that do this, most of us that do this and do it for the right reason, we're an advocate for the people that we care for and we care about and that we're passionate about.
Well, and just hearing that number, was it 2.8 million people are going to die from obesity related?
As a result of being, now it doesn't mean, you know, you walk in, your scale's too high, you die. There's comorbidities go along with it, but there's a direct correlation as a result of either being overweight or, you know, obese, morbidly obese. So, you know, I think for us, and we won't get caught off on the pandemic, but I think for us as physicians, especially as bariatric surgeons, and I've sat, talked to so many people, I'm like, it's great that we're putting all these things in place to try to eradicate or try to at least calm down a disease that's been terrible for a lot of people. But the number one predictor of a poor outcome of COVID was obesity, not age. It was actually obesity that related to if you're going to be hospitalized, if you're going to be put on a ventilator, and if you're going to die. So what are we going to do about fixing the underlying root of the problem that I feel pretty comfortable if I get it, God willing, I'll probably be okay. So how can we help those people that are at higher risk for the next COVID, for the next surge, for the next whatever that comes down the pipe years from now, is it will happen. Are we going to put as much time, energy, and money into educating primary care physicians, the general public of these numbers that we're talking about, to finally get them the treatment that they need that works? It's not perfect, but there is literally no comparison of what we have to offer versus any other modality out there.
And just to hear your chance, like, sure, you can attempt to take yourself out of obesity on your own, and you're going to have a 1% chance of success. So if that's the road that you, I mean, when you hear those numbers, it just sounds asinine. Like, why would I ever think that bariatric surgery was not an option?
Right.
But what that really just speaks to is how prevalent the stigma of bariatric surgery is, how shameful being obese or fat is in the world, and how we are bombarded constantly by all of these companies and programs and marketing schemes that are telling us you can do it on your own. Why would you not do it on your own? Like, this is the only way. When in reality, all of the numbers are showing us this is absolutely not the way.
Right. Yeah. And like I said, we're talking about the morbidly obese population, BMI 35 or higher. We're not talking about somebody who's trying to lose 20, 30 pounds.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. And you know, and again, none of us are saying have surgery versus learning how to eat healthy and exercise.
Yeah.
We're not saying that. We're saying those things in conjunction with having surgery takes you from that 1% at 1 year to 50% at 5 years. So when people, you know, we've all heard it, the easy way out. I'm like, what is, so did they say you were taking the easy way out if you went and did it the old fashioned way? Because they're saying the easy way is the alternative. We're telling you the old fashioned way plus maybe a 6-month program, jumping through all these hoops, sitting through all this education, having mm-hmm. surgery, healing from surgery, learning, mm-hmm. taking your steps. There's nothing easy about that.
No. Well, and that's why it's called a tool, not the tool. Right. Nobody calls it the, bariatric surgery is the tool that you need to be able to, like, no, it is a tool in conjunction with, because yep. nobody just has a surgery, sits around on their ass and doesn't, you know, it just loses all the weight and goes, fine, this is great.
And there's all kinds of muscle that do that early on yeah. and it drops off, but they never maintain those results. So, you know, we have to, in my profession, whether it be just me or me and my providers and my dietitians and my support team, we have to find a way to either get enough people or take the time to settle this at the beginning and make them aware of that to set themselves up for the best chance of success.
I'm like dumbfounded. I'm just astounded at just how, why are these not numbers like blasted on billboards? You know what I mean?
Well, you know, it's interesting. So, you know, my new, I've always got to find something new to get me, you know, fired up. And at the end of every year, our numbers continue to grow and everybody sits in the hospital in our program and they're like patting each other on the back. And I let them do that for like 5 minutes. I'm like, all right, so what are we doing next? What's our next mission? You know? And obviously as a surgeon, we want to reach as many people as possible, but it's not just about doing as many surgeries as you can. It's like, what's our next way to help treat the disease that we all are here to treat?
Yeah.
And, you know, my big thing that I'm brainstorming with some people from some different categories within healthcare is, how do we find a way to reach our primary care docs to, first and foremost, if you have those that are doubters, educate them, give them the information. They're all very smart people, but give them the information. Maybe they're going on myths. Maybe they had a patient they referred and they had a complication. And they think, oh gosh, I'm never doing that again. You know, because those bad situations always stick out. Present basic facts to them. And once you get them on the same page, plus the ones that are already on the same page, say, listen, you guys see 40, 50 people a day, more. When somebody comes in and you're treating 5 and 6 medical problems and they're all related to their obesity, if not the majority of them. But you guys don't have time to stop and take the time to talk about some of this stuff. I get it. So how do we find a way for you present something to them and don't let them leave? You know, you educate them on basic obesity. You can code for that. You can do that. You can get it started, but you don't get out the door. I need you to sit over there. And we'll use me as an example in my market. And I'm going to hand you an iPad. And I want you to talk to Dr. Smith and his team. And I want you to hear 15 to 20 minutes of some really cool facts that he's got for you. And at the end, when are we going to set up your first intake appointment? Let's see if you have insurance. If not, here's some other options and let's get things started. Because we're dealing with patients that have been ridiculed. Mm-hmm. They're insecure. They have been told that they have a self-inflicted disease. Mm-hmm. And we have an option for them that they have to go through a massive ordeal to seek it. So I'm expecting that patient to leave the office. And even if that doctor took 3 minutes to tell them, educate them on their way, you walk out of the office totally torn down, sad. But you're supposed to take the initiative to reach out to somebody and go to a seminar and seek this out. Mm-hmm. We have to come together. And that's one of my next missions is, how do we bridge that gap between the surgical treatment and the people, the frontline docs? Because those people don't trust me. They trust their family doctor. They see them for their colds and the births and their kids, their broken bones and their breast cancer and everything else. And I don't pretend to know all the answers, but I think I've got some really good ideas of how we start to take care of that. Because right now we're treating less than 1% of the people in the United States who qualify for surgery.
Which is mind blowing, right? Like, even if you just look at it from an economic standpoint, from like an overall like happiness, like any metric, you're telling me that only 1% of the people are fighting back against this disease of obesity. And look at the impact that it's actually having on our nation.
Right.
It's insane. Well,
and the crazy part of that is it's only 1% of the people who initially come in for a consult. Yeah. Like that doesn't even count the people that haven't even figured out that this will work for them yet.
Yeah.
Like that's the craziest part is there's so many people out there that have the surgery every year, but there's probably triple the amount of people that have the surgery that need it and don't even, you know, haven't even been talked to about it.
Yeah.
I had a patient just this past week, who's getting ready for surgery. They needed their final letter from their family doctor. Their insurance required a 6-month diet, you know, or 6-month, you know, weigh-in. Their primary care provider gives us the letter for their submission for their procedure. They've already been approved. It's just literally the checkbox. And on the letter they wrote, and I'm summarizing, after 6 months, dietary education, God knows what they got, but they obviously got ours. Patient has gained 20 pounds during this 6 month. Therefore, I do not feel patient is a good candidate for weight loss surgery. Now, because my staff is sometimes they're my filter, I told my girls, get the phone, get that doctor on the call, on the phone, and I'm going to tell them right now, because they're also diabetic. Did they stop giving them diabetes medicines today? Because they obviously aren't making the choices that they should make to control their diabetes the best that they can. If they need more insulin, are they going to say, nope, you're cut off.
Mm-hmm.
You've not done anything that I've asked you to do to help control your disease of diabetes. So I'm not even going to treat you.
Right.
And of course they said, you're not going to talk to them today. You're going to calm down and cool down over the weekend. And we'll talk about it next week. But seriously, think about that for a second.
I know. Now,
is that something that I'm going to talk to that patient about? Well, sure. Are you really employing the changes that we've given you? What are you struggling with? How can we help you? You know, quit saying you're not doing the right things. Like where are we at? But so you're going to deny treatment, but you don't deny treatment for anything else. Do you refuse if somebody gets cardiac stents and they smoke and their stents clot off? Do they refuse? I'm not giving you any more till you smoke. Stop smoking. No, you go to jail.
Correct. Obesity is the only disease that they deny treatment for.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And you like you talk about it. You're like, okay, the patient has diabetes. The patient probably has a number of other comorbidities like myself did before I had it. Me and my doctor talked about exercise and weight loss for 2 years before I had my surgery.
Right.
But guess what? She wanted me to go out and walk 45 minutes a day, 6 times a week.
Right.
468 pounds, kissed my entire ass. I was getting out walking for it. Right. I couldn't walk 45 feet without trying to die. So there was no way in hell I was going to do 45 minutes 6 days a week. No, absolutely not.
It's like,
so
it's
you
like
can write
that. One, you can. And number two, there's no science behind that. And I don't know your doctor and I'm not trying to be critical, but again, the things that people are telling them, is there science behind this? Is there data behind this? Let's, you know, just cause that sounds like you should do all this. Like, do you have any proof behind that? And there's no proof behind that. You know, she didn't tell you anything about looking at your heart rate, seeing, I mean, you can walk for 3 hours if you want to slow enough and carry on a conversation, you're going to burn about 100 calories. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, I had a lady one time, she said, my doctors for years told me I need to eat right. Like I need to eat right. And I said, okay. So she's like, it took me 2 years to get the courage to finally say, can you tell me what that is?
Right. What's that mean?
And I said, and what did he say to you? She said, he actually looked me in the eye and said, if it tastes good, don't eat it. I said, please tell me you found another doctor. And she said, it took me about another year before I did. And I said, listen, there's a lot of stuff I don't know. I'll be the first to tell you. I'm not an internist. There's stuff I don't know about stuff outside of my field, but I'll tell you what, if you ask me, it's my job to get you in the hands of somebody who does know, mm-hmm. you know? And the fact that he was so lazy that he would not get you that information. They don't teach us to be a dietitian in medical school. They don't teach us near what they should. That's why I have really smart dietitians that work with me. And it doesn't hurt my pride a lot to say, Mary, come in here. Jayana, come in here. Cindy, come in here. Doesn't hurt my ego at all. I want to get you in the hands of the people that can help you the best. And we have to get past this. And, you know, you started this off by talking about a patient's why. And I think that's really how the conversation has to start. When they have these apprehensions, well, why are you here? Mm-hmm. How did you end up here in spite of the fact that you heard these comments from family members or friends or loved ones, or maybe lack of support from a primary care? Let's define your why, you know, and what can we do to keep you accountable for your why?
And the powerful tools that you're giving them and that you've given us in this conversation is that once we identify our why, we can then back it with facts, right? So it's like, I know that this is right for me. That is necessary and needed to start this process. But many of us also need the, I know it's right for me, but why is it right for me? And these numbers, these facts, these statistics are what is arming people with the information that they need to go forward and continue to explore their why and to commit to bariatric surgery and really committing to living their life after surgery as a patient. Because it's one thing to know, to think you know what it's going to be like. It's a totally different thing to be living it on the other side of it. Right. And we all get to this point in our bariatric journey where we realize, okay, I've gotten what I've wanted, and that's a healthy weight, but I did not think it would be like this to get there, right? Right. It's like when you want something so bad and you're like, oh, but I did not think it would mean I would have to do X, Y, Z. And there's this huge battle that really goes on with yourself as a patient. And you reach this point where you really need to commit to living your life as a bariatric patient. And these statistics, again, can be a tool in our toolbox that we could go back to, right? I only have a 1% chance if I abandon my bariatric life and just go back to quote unquote diet and exercise, right? If I just ignore my tool, I mean, it's just mind-blowing. So it's a necessary and needed component of our why and of our story. And even if we don't share it outside of ourselves, we need that for us to move forward, because we are going to be bombarded with messages and comments and society and all of these things pressuring us about our decision. And what you're giving us is a tool to fight back against that pressure.
Well, and I think, you know, what I've learned over time, and it's obviously as I've become more involved on a social media standpoint, which as we talked off camera, I'll be the first to admit, I mean, I'll call myself out if I need to be called out. I was very resistant to it. You know, I had a lot of misconceptions about it. You know, my perception of social media, maybe I'm getting old, but was just Facebook and everything that went along with it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think when I started seeing the community that was out there and the support that was out there and, you know, the dietitians, the psychologists, the therapists, the patients, the surgeons, the stories, all that stuff, really opened my eyes. And I said, you know what, you can't sit around and say, I'm scared of Dr. Google and what information my patients are getting. If I'm not willing to contribute, I'm going to sit around and just complain that there's bad stuff out there. Well, why don't you do something about it? You know, and I really had to call myself out and say, then put something out there. And I think a lot of other obviously that's just a blip on the screen, but trying to do that. And I'm still growing in that, trying to find what people want and get these conversations out there to patients to hear. But what's been cool is I've slowly had patients who, you know, in the office, we'll encourage people, you know, share your story if you want. And we don't ever want them to think, hey, we want you to be a billboard or an ad for us. You know, we just want you to share your story because you have no idea the impact you can make on people, for them to see where you were and where you are now. And I've seen some really cool stories of patients who are just, you know, very quiet and shy. But when they see the impact they make on other people, that's ultimately why they do it. But then I slowly have people reach out to me and say, I feel like you're giving me a platform that I can do this. I was scared to share it because I felt like I kind of thought what people told me. I mean, I did it for the right reason, but maybe I did take the easy way out, or I really didn't want to hear the repercussions. And you're giving me a safe place to take that to. You're giving me a safe place to be connected with other people that I can either help people, or, you know what, don't be afraid to be proud of yourself either. You know, stretch yourself if you want to. That's great. You know, just my only problem is don't stretch yourself and then assume that everybody's else supposed to follow your journey if they don't, you know, if they don't meet that standard. And yeah, we very rarely see that. You guys know that, but you know, it's empowering. And when they see that opportunity, it's really cool to see the people reach out and say, hey, I mean, I had a girl that she was 6 years out until she finally reached out to me. I mean, we knew she was doing well, and she's finally like, I want to send you some pictures. What you changed my life. Of course, I love that. And now she's starting to share a little bit, you know, because she sees the other people that are encouraged by that. Yeah. And she says, it holds me accountable. You know, there was a time period that I thought I could do it on my own, and I started to go backwards, and I realized I couldn't.
Yep. We literally, it is our operating mantra, right? Community is treatment. And we see it all the time. We know when people are struggling because they ghost the community. Yeah. Their missing presence is felt. And we all know what that means. It means that they're struggling. And your first reaction when you're struggling is, oh, nope, I can't. I can't have anybody see me struggling.
Right. I got the standard I got to live up to.
Right. But what we are on a mission to really let people know is that, right, your story is in the struggle. You have to go through the struggle to find the answers that you need to finally have these things, right, fall into place for you. Right. The struggle is where the work is. The struggle is where the discovery is. We all want to see your struggle, not because we're rooting for you, because we know right. that if you can just say, oh, I'm struggling, what we see is growth. Oh, yes, friend, you are doing the work. You are trying to figure, you are figuring this out. You are, you know, that's what we want to see. Because if we are silent about the struggle, people are going to think that when they struggle on their own, something's wrong with them. And right. it's just like what you said, right? No. It's actually 99% of people struggle. You are in the big group. So let's make this normal and not be fearful about, you know, the perception of doing it right. Because there is no right way to do this. However way you're going to get through it is how you're going to get through it. And it's going to involve struggle and setback and all of these big scary things. But guess what? We did it too. We're struggling too. We're still here. We're doing right. it.
As our dear friend Nat says, grow through what you go through. And you can't have growth without struggle. And if you're not showing other people that you know that they belong in the bigger group, then they're just going to disappear. They're going to feel like a failure because everything else that we've done before we had surgery failed. And that kicks in, you know, the shame yeah. cycle again. So, you know, being upfront, being truthful and being out there, because, you know, as everybody in our community knows, I was struggling too, not too long ago. And I went to April and Natalie both and was like, I don't know if I should be talking about this on here because I don't want to give people the wrong idea that it's okay to be slipping and sliding and doing all this. And they, you know, they quickly brought me back to reality and were like, hey, if they don't know that you're going through it, it's, you know, they're not going to know that it's a problem. So we got to be authentic and raw and show everybody what it is. And, you know, not only was it therapeutic for me to talk about it amongst people that I know would understand, but it also, the accountability portion of that came in. And I had people that were checking on me, that were making sure that I was doing good, that was making sure that I wasn't being too hard on myself. Because, like you said, I mean, this is a marathon, not a sprint. We're not going to just get to our 2 years out and be like, okay, we're done. But, I was very anchor patient, but now I'm just bomb. Like, it doesn't work that way. Like, you're going to be forever. We're forever working on ourselves. And the finish line is when we check out. Like, that's it. So everybody's got to know that we're doing this for the long haul.
You get a dual benefit every time. You help other people, but you ultimately help yourself. And, you know, that's human nature. You know, if we're a leading opinion on something, we immediately feel like, well, if I'm not holding up to this really high standard, then I can't be that opinion anymore.
Yep.
And
that's exactly what I said. Honestly, I was like, who am I to be out here telling people how to do something if I can't do it my damn self?
Yeah. I mean, you'd never have a doctor. You'd never have a preacher. You'd never have anything in between. I mean, we're all human. You know, we have our struggles all the time, and we get to go through that. I mean, I've been out at a restaurant, you know, the time I order dessert and I'm like, oh gosh, I'm sitting around here, you know, but you know, now I'm like, no, I'm normal. You know,
yes.
I'm just like everybody else. So, but it is hard. I mean, to sit here and say that just do it, it's still hard. So I think really trying to help people define their why of why they're there helps them in those times. But I think the information is vital to give these people, to not only for themselves, but for the people that they're going to come in contact with, that are going to show up at that worst time and say, eh, I told you so, or, you know,
right,
I shouldn't have done that, you know.
Yep.
And what would you have gotten with, what was your other alternative?
Yeah.
Well, that's why we try to, you know, instill in people that, you know, much like your journey, your why is going to be different. It's not going to look the same for everybody else. Some people may be statistically driven and need the medical side of things to show them that that's what it is. Other people are going to be family, friends, kids, grandkids, or a mixture of all of it. It may be the fact that the, you know, the lab report shows this, and you got your family and your kids over here want you to be healthy, and you got this. Like, there can be compounding factors that lead you to the decision. And that's okay. Like, everybody's why is going to be completely different. And that's awesome. It's the same thing as the journey and the struggle. Like, everybody's journeys and struggles are going to be different, but that's the beauty of the process of this whole thing. Right. And when you were talking about Dr. Google, that made me think about it. Before April and I and some of the others in the community had started kind of this outreach that we're doing, really legitimately, it was super easy to find like the horror stories of bariatric surgery on, like, you could for the longest time, if you put in VSG on YouTube, it pulled up 2 pages worth of videos that were nothing but complete negativity and horror stories about why it didn't work, before you found a couple of people that were like, no, I'm actually doing pretty good. Like, I'm kind of nailing it over here. And so all you saw was the naysayer stuff. Now, luckily, we're getting to the point where it's getting to be a little bit less of that, and we're starting to see way more of the positive stuff coming out. And I'm super glad to find other people that are as passionate about it as we are, so we can kind of hit it from all sides.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Smith, this has been an enlightening conversation. I think we only got to like 1/3 of what we actually wanted to talk to you about today.
That's all right. We'll do it again.
I just need more episodes coming. That's all that means.
Exactly. So we always love to kind of give the floor to our guests at the end of our show. Is there one piece of advice that you'd really like to pass along to our listeners or watchers, or reiterate about the importance of having patients really know and own, identify their why?
Yeah. You know, I think just early on, you know, why are you there? Are you there because a doctor sent you? Are you there because someone told you? That can be dangerous, because if you're not committed. But are you also, by knowing your why, you can battle those voices from the outside. You know, I tell my patients, I'm like, I'm sure all these people love you very much. They're not saying these things because they're intentionally trying to sabotage you, but they're uneducated about what we're talking about. I want you to be educated about it, because you're going to have those moments. It's a lot of hard work. We all know that, but it's not, when you make a mistake, it's not about, well, you're not working hard. It's mistakes happen. You know, I always tell my patients that it's my job to create an environment here that it's as easy to show up when you're struggling as it is when you're doing well. It's easy to show up when you're in one leg of a pair of pants that you used to wear, or the before and afters look great. But what, how comforting is the environment when you come in and say, I've hit a stall, and I think there's some things I could do better. So the stronger you believe in your why, the easier it is to work through those periods. As a surgeon, from a surgeon's standpoint, I think it's important that you find someone that supports you in your why, that's not going to say, you put weight on, 900 calories, no questions asked, just eat like this for the rest of your life and you'll be fine. You eat like that for the rest of your life without surgery, you probably stay, but that's not realistic. You know, somebody who truly understands and believes in your why and has the ability to have people around them that can support you with that. So everybody's why is going to be different, but you have to believe in it, because it's what will drive you not only to reach what you want to reach, but most importantly, be there for you when you're going to need it. And there will be a time when you need it.
Absolutely. Dr. Smith, thank you so much for your time today. This has been an enlightening and engaging conversation. I know there was, I had a lot of like, oh my God moments. I need to be writing these. I need to write this down, but thank God it's recorded because yeah. I could just go back and listen or watch, but we know how busy you are. We very much appreciate your time. Where can they follow you? Where can people follow you on Instagram?
On Instagram, it's Dr. Eric Smith _ if you want to follow along there. My practice is also on Instagram. It's Georgetown Bariatrics and Advanced, or excuse me, they're on Instagram, but Facebook, they're probably more Facebook presence, but Georgetown Bariatrics and Advanced Surgical Services here in Georgetown, Kentucky. Most of the stuff that I do is on Instagram. So it's Dr. Eric Smith _. I have a YouTube channel as well under my name. And that's mostly surgical content with all the teaching that I do, but surprisingly, I've had a lot of people pop on there and watch the surgeries and kind of see how it's done. There's a sleeve and a bypass on there that's narrated. If somebody wants to kind of hear from a medical standpoint, the steps of actually just dumped a couple new procedures on this weekend. If they want to see the surgical side of it, you know, I encourage all our patients to watch the surgery, go through the steps, understand why we do what we do. But yeah, those are some of the ways that you can follow along. Obviously, some people know that I'm involved in a show on the Learning Channel called 1,000-Pound Sisters, and I'm the surgeon on there. That's a very small part of what I do. I've been doing this a lot longer than that. But if you want to follow along for that, you're more than welcome to do that as well.
Oh, we are just so thankful that you are here for patients every step of the way, that you understand that this is a journey that requires lifelong treatment, and that you are here to partner with your patients for their entire journey. It's inspiring and it's uplifting, and we're just so thankful that our paths have crossed. This is amazing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's been great working with you guys. Look forward to it in the future.
We do too. Jason, my friend, you want to take us out?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, Dr. Smith, we can't thank you enough for your time, your knowledge, your wisdom, and your compassion. That's one of the biggest things that we don't get a lot of from the surgical side of things, so we appreciate that very much. We also want to thank you guys for supporting us. The likes, the shares, the subscribes, all of those things have continued to help spread the word, and we can't thank you enough. Do not forget that you can leave us ratings and reviews on your favorite podcast players, as well as our YouTube channel. That helps us out tremendously to keep, you know, spreading the word. So just remember, at the end of the day, you've got this, we've got you, and we'll see you next time.
Awesome. Thanks, friends. Thank you, Dr. Smith.